Back on page 29, it says each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. And that's what I'm going to do tonight, is tell you about how I established my relationship with God. And as I had shared last week, that the disease had progressed to such an extent that I was no longer able to just eat behind closed doors in secret, that as soon as food was presented to me, I just had to eat it no matter how I looked to other people. And I could tell by their expressions how disgusted they were with watching me eat that way. And here was this fat guy, and he was just eating like an animal. And but that was the kind of God setting the stage for this coming to believe stuff, because I didn't I had a real problem with the God stuff, as I had mentioned before. So when I guess roll back the clock a little bit. So my wife was alcoholic, and she was in St. Jude's Recovery Center, and she was in there for 30 days. And while she was in there, I had the opportunity to have dinner with them a couple of times at their buffet when I stopped to visit, and it just happened to be at mealtime. And they didn't have an eating disorder unit, but they knew an eating disorder when they saw it, and they saw that I had one just by the way I attacked the food at their place there. And so they told her to tell me that there was a place for me, for compulsive overeaters, and that was OA, and I had never heard of OA, unbelievably. Even though I had been fighting this disease for years, and I had not heard any inkling that OA even existed. And but just to show you how desperate I was, that I found out where the where OA meetings were in my area. And and that wasn't easy to do in those days, because there was no Google, and there was no ability to just get on the internet and be able to find something on the easily. And so I found out where there was a meeting. It was the Prince of Peace Church over on Covina Boulevard in Covina, not too far from my house. And it was a 7 o'clock meeting. I got there about 5 minutes to seven, and I got out of the car, and then I started getting the cold feet, and I started really thinking, maybe I really don't want to go in there. I don't know what's. And there was a lady that was arriving about the same time I did. Her name was Nora, and Nora saw me standing there, and she said, "Are you looking for a meeting?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." And she said, "Here, I'll show you the way." And so she basically took me almost by the hand, not quite, but almost. And she took me into the meeting, and it was just a few minutes before the meeting was scheduled to start. And she introduced me to the lady that was the secretary, and then some of the other people that were there. And there were probably maybe 12, 13 people, not a whole bunch of people. And so I sat there for the meeting, and as I'm listening to these people, it became obvious that they knew a lot about the food stuff, that they were experts, just like I had become. And the only difference was that they had found a solution, and they were talking about this thing called abstinence. And I went, "What the heck is abstinence?" And I figured, well, that must be what they call it when they're on a diet, that must be what abstinence is. But then it became obvious that there was more than that, because some of the people had some form of abstinence that didn't include bread or sugar, and some of them had low carb plans of eating and stuff. And so it was, I was hearing all these kind of contradictory in a way. ideas floating around. But the one thing that was really common was that they all felt comfortable with their relationship with food. And I had never felt that. And so I was really, let's just say, attracted to what they had. And but then when they started talking about giving up bread, giving up sugar, I didn't know so much about the sugar, but bread I could never give up. I had shared last week how it was my childhood friend that I would crunch up balls of bread and throw hide it under the covers of my bed and have a binge when I went to bed that night. And how I would make lines of sandwiches. And those were the things that I did routinely. And so I figured, well, but maybe, I really like this bunch of people. Maybe I could fake it. Maybe I could fake the bread thing that maybe I could have just a little bit or something. Well, I'll worry about that later. And then they start talking about the God stuff. Now that was a different ball game. And for me, I had been brought up with the idea of God. I had gone to Catholic school, so that wasn't a new concept for me. But I had come to feel over the years that that God had kind of abandoned me, that I had dropped through the cracks somehow, and that I just wasn't on his radar at all. And I had been left to kind of negotiate life on my own. And so that was kind of my mindset when it came to God. But I said, well, maybe I can fake the God thing. And I said, I don't know about that, but I'll give it a try. And so I had basically made up my mind that I was going to come back to another meeting, and I was going to give it a try. And so that was it. That was and so I came to my second meeting, and the second meeting, God really set that one up, that it was in the basement of the Intercommunity Hospital in Covina, and it was in a classroom. That's where it was supposed to be. That night, some other group had taken over the classroom, and they gave the only room they had available for us was the doctor's boardroom. And it was a huge oval table with really plush high-back chairs. And there were enough people to fill up the table, and so I was have to say it was probably 15 people, and then there were three or four that were sitting along the wall on one side, and the guy that was the leader of that meeting, he did his pitch, whatever it was, and then he called for a topic for the meeting, and the topic was to be miracles. And then he said, let's go around the table and each tell a miracle story. I said, oh, brother. So as they start telling their miracle stories, I was just getting more antsy and more antsy. I was ready to run out of there. And anyway, but it came my turn. And I just told him what I was thinking, that I thought that was a bunch of baloney, and that wasn't a bunch of miracle stories. That was a coincidence stories that you guys are telling. And there was this lady, Rusty, who was one of the ones sitting against the wall. And Rusty spoke up and she said, why don't you just keep coming back and maybe you'll see your own miracle? And so, I thought about it later that, most people, if you went in and told them you didn't like what they were preaching, they would tell you to go someplace else. And not these people. They told me to keep coming back. And so I decided that I would go to the Monday night meeting at the library, which was a newcomer meeting. And I said that would be I'd give it one more try. But that's I walked out of that meeting, and I certainly wasn't any closer to having a concept or relationship with God than I did when I walked in. In fact, is I was somewhat defiant and somewhat dismissing of the idea. And so that next Friday, the next day was Friday, and And I had just got a regular day at work, and then my wife had been released from the AA place that she was at, and we decided, well, to kind of celebrate, we're going to go down. We had a beach condo down in Imperial Beach near San Diego, and so we decided we were going to go down there. And so we left Friday night, and so we spent the night down there, and then woke up in the morning. And they had told her before they released her that if she got the cravings for alcohol, that chocolate was a good thing to stem the cravings. And so she had gotten the cravings, I guess. And so she had baked this great big batch of chocolate chip cookies. And she came out with a platter full of them, and right out of the oven, hot out of the oven. And she said, do you want some of these? Like, duh. And my response was totally different. I said, I don't eat those anymore. And I said it just like I said it right now, automatically, no forethought, no nothing. Just that I don't eat them anymore. And I meant I don't ever eat them anymore. And I knew I meant that. And I didn't know that was me saying it because I had made no decision like that. I certainly didn't feel like I had the power to do that. And I started crying. And because I knew that I was free, that I was free of this obsession. I don't know. And then I also, then it dawned on me what this meant. What it meant was that there was a God, a loving God. He knew that I existed, and that he had reached out, and he had reached out, and he had delivered me from the clutches of this disease. And it was an amazing moment for me. And and it really it got me thinking about it. So what is the difference between, because I had gone on Optifast, and where an Optifast, I was able to do this fast where I ate no solid food for 9 months, and I lost a whole bunch of weight. But this was different. That this
Ten
really,
10 minutes, Daryl.
okay, thank you. There I knew that I was going to always have the opportunity to eat at a later time, and that. But that wasn't my takeaway from this. That what had happened is I had been given the power of choice, had been restored. That I could now choose to either eat something or not eat something, that there was almost like a little gap of time between the thought and seeing the food, having the thought, and then deciding whether I really want to eat it or not. And so it started out that way. That we'll get into step three next week, but it at first my I didn't I have to say that it wasn't like, oh, well, God has relieved this, and so I'm home free, because that certainly wasn't my thought. That I didn't want to lose it. I was thankful for what I had, but I still I came up with this strategy that I would eat dinner after I go into a meeting. So I'd find a where there was a meeting someplace in the San Gabriel Valley area, and on every night of the week, and I would go to that meeting, and I wouldn't have dinner until after the meeting, because I knew that if I had dinner before the meeting, I'd probably eat another dinner after the meeting. So by not eating beforehand, I was kind of taking that risk off the table. And so that was the only meeting that the only night that we didn't have a meeting in Skivvy at that time was Sunday night, and I would drive to a meeting in Alhambra, which was probably about 15 miles away, not that far, and I would do that on Sunday nights. And so I was going to a nighttime meeting a day, And later on, more a lot more meetings in the morning as I was able to rearrange my schedule over time. But it turned out that that those early days were just incredibly important for me. And so step two came to believe. And so that was the way I came to believe, is by having God kind of deliver the miracle up front and letting me know that this is what is here for you in this program. And so but I also knew that there had to be more to it than that, just from listening to the shares. And people were talking about things like sponsors and that. And so, one of the things that really struck me as in retrospect and looking back at those days was the fact that I was so willing to follow direction I remember, so I had this concept of God, which would have been my first concept of God was the concept of God of the Bible, and said, this is the God of the ages, and that was my first concept, and it was one that that worked really well. But the problem was that I still was kind of shaky with the food part of it, and I felt that I really had to be able to do a better job. Next week I'll be talking about step three, because step three turned out to be a difficult step for me. You would think that with step two coming so, I'm gonna say, easily or automatically, because of this miracle that got me in the door, so to speak. And the miracle has been ongoing. I remember that right after that experience at that meeting, that I went out to dinner with my wife, and the rolls of bread that they put on the table on the basket, they were like rocks, that they had no appeal to me. It would be 3 years before I would have a piece of bread. And I still remember that, debating whether I could have it or not. And it was really a trust God issue, because I was on a business trip, and we were there were a group of us, and we were going to see a plant that somebody had built out in Arizona. And so we were out in the middle of nowhere, and and I had gotten up late at the hotel, and I missed breakfast, and so I just barely got in the bus. And then when they delivered the lunch break, the lunch was one of those great big giant sandwiches that's cut into sections. And I'm sitting there looking at that, and I'm saying, "Am I going to break my abstinence over this sandwich?" And I finally came to the conclusion that no, God would not do that. He would not he would not throw me out the window because I had a piece of bread. And I had it, and he didn't throw me out the window. And I very seldom have a piece of bread. I have not had a sandwich that I made myself for 37 years,
5 minutes.
and I haven't had a piece of pizza in 37 years, and especially I have not had a cookie in 37 years. Now, what's really weird about that is my second wife, Anne, who I'm married to now, is one of the best cookie makers in town. Everybody tells me that, and I've never tasted one of her cookies. But yet she would have me pack them for gifts to give to people at Christmas time, and I'd be packing them, putting them in these little baggies, and I'm telling you, it's the most amazing thing in the world that I didn't sneak one, look around and see if anybody was looking, and just pop one in my mouth. But nope, and haven't had to do that, and I'm just so grateful that that's the kind of God that I ended up with. that gave me this power of choice of whether or not I want to eat or not eat. Now, has it been perfect? No. And I haven't I often wondered why was it that that it wasn't perfect. Like, because I know some guys that have that they just got it on day one and they have not eaten anything off their program in 20, 30 years. And I said, well, why me? And I came to the conclusion was that I was of more use to God with me struggling with the food and with abstinence because I could identify with the newcomers, and I could identify very easily with the newcomers, and it's one of the reasons why I go to the newcomer meeting every week is because that I think that that's what I'm supposed to do. And that's a a specialty that that God carved out for me, and it's but it's still I would say that in looking back at the whole thing that this was this would have been probably the hardest step, and it might have been the roadblock step for me to keep me from going on to the later steps, but because that when God delivered this gift of abstinence, then that was a no-brainer that it had to be God, because I had looked every place myself. I had hired the best people that I could afford to hire. They couldn't do it. And I'd gone to all these doctors, and they couldn't do it. I'd taken pills, they couldn't do it. I'd done shots, they that couldn't that didn't work. And so everything had not worked, and all of a sudden I go to two meetings and this works. And so I knew that it was God. And it became very important for me later on to be able to see that I guess I'd been in program probably maybe 15 years when it dawned on me that right after the steps, I have my big book right here, but right after the steps and how it works, the let me just grab this. So it says, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and that God could and would if he were sought. And then the next words that he has is being convinced we were at step three. That means the whole book up to this point is about steps one and two. That it wasn't until we were able to be convinced of the existence of a higher power that that we could not move on. And so that was that was the thing that once I saw that, I realized what a gift step two had been for me. Because it would have been probably the stumbling block that would have kept me for from working the rest of the rest of the steps. And so anyway, so that's my thought that that once that happened, you remember in the chapter that we just read, it said that if we were willing to believe, if we did believe or were willing to believe in a power greater than ourselves, that that was the cornerstone. And then after that, they had that example right at the end where the guy tumbles out of bed. And it says in that chapter, thus our friend's cornerstone was set in place, and no later vicissitude has ever caused him to go back and to go back out. And I feel that way, that that was my cornerstone, and that my step two moment was when it got set in place. And nothing has convinced me since then to look back and say, oh no, that was a mistake, or that this isn't working for me anymore, or anything like that. I'm just so grateful that I have God in my life. And I'll, be talking more about my struggle with finding my who God was for me. And I know exactly when that happened too, and it was about 3 years in program that I discovered that my higher power was Jesus Christ. I didn't know that at first. I thought it was the God of the old God of the Bible, and God the Father, and according to the Trinity. And then I later on, and it was like I say, 3 years later that I was led to that, and it was led in a spectacular way, just like this one was. So anyway, that's going to be it for step two, and then next week we'll be talking about step three.